Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem. Welcome back to today's Daf Hayemi, Meseches Becheiros Daf Chavches. We are holding 8 lines from the top of the Amud at the two dots, which excerpts the Mishnah as follows. Noirot Leimum B'Torch Shnosoi. Mishnah speaks about a Becher, which ideally is meant to be looked after, consumed. If he's unblemished, brought as a korban. If he's blemished, then the kohen consumes him privately within a year. So prior to its first birthday. Now, if the mum occurred within the year, rashai l'kaymai kol yibes chodesh, although it's no longer going to be offered as a korban, but once again he's meant to consume it within that 12-month period. And the Mishnah concludes something about after the year, 30 days. Now, what does the Mishnah mean by that? Do we give every person 12 months plus 30 days, which is like a little of a bonus, you know, spillover period? It's close enough to the year, and it's considered within that, you know, year time frame. Or is that second halacha a different time frame? It's referring to a totally different circumstance. Okay, so let's say nowadays you can't do anything with the Becher until it gets a mum. So he's holding on to it, the Kohen is holding on to it, waiting and waiting, and it's already past the year. Now, a mum shows up. He has 30 days to tend to it. So what's the 30-day period applied to? Is it to the standard 12-month period? So even if the mum occurred before 12 months are over, you have 12 months plus 30 days? Or, no. If the mum occurred within a 12-month period, then all you have is 12 months. It's just that if it didn't happen until afterwards, then we give you a separate 30-day period. Iboilu. Okay, so that was posed as a question in the yeshiva. What did the Mishnah mean? Heichi akamar. What are we intending to say? Shall we say that every Bechor gets 12 months plus 30 days? Noidla lemum b'tech shnasai. So if the mum showed up within the year, Rashi lekaima, you can hold on to it kol yibes chodesh until the end of the 12 months. Ula achar shnasei nami shleishim yoyim plus 30 days, which is close enough to the year. It's not considered a transgression. It's not considered having gone past the year. 30 days still was in, striking range of the 12 months. You know, within the first month, right? Oydum or heicha denur lemum b'tech shnasei. Truthfully, if the mum occurred now within the year, all you have is the year. There's no bonus of 30 days. Rasha l'kaimai kol shneim as a chodesh. You can hold on to him for the end of the till the end of 12 months. V'suloi, and that is it. It's just that in the second case, if the mum surfaced only after the year was up, so we're no longer applying the 12-month time frame. We have a new time frame, which is 30 days. You can hold on to it for a maximum of 30. So this 30-day period, is it an add-on to the 12 months for every case? Or is it a new time frame once you pass the 12 months? Tashmai comes at Rai. The Sanya, the Brisa says, Bechor bismanazeh. Okay, so the Kohen has a Bechor nowadays. He has to wait and wait until he gets a mum. Actually, nira laharoise b'lachacham. If the Bechor is not yet suitable to be shown to an expert to determine whether there's a proper mum, because it doesn't have a mum, it's still unblemished. In this case, just hang on to it. There's no expiration date. You just, there's no choice. Rashi lekaimai, shtayim v'shalishanim. You can hold on to it 2-3 years. But once you notice a mum, mishinira l'arayis l'chacham, once you have a mum to show, so now the clock starts ticking. If it's still within a year of its birth, Rashai l'kaimai kol shnei mesachodesh, you have until the 12 month is over. Achar shnasai, but if the mum only showed up after the year was up, einai Rashai l'kaimai afilu yoy mecha. Truthfully, you shouldn't be allowed to hold on to it even for one day. Afilu sha'achas, even for one moment. So really, we should not have this new 30-day period aval. And the reason why we have it is because as follows. We want to prevent the owner from having loss. And because of that, Amr al-Chacham instituted this new time zone. Rashi lekayim shloshim yoyim. And Rashi explains as follows. You know, if the Bechor is still sitting in the hands of the Yisrael farmer, and he notices this mum, and it's already past the birthday, he has to quickly shecht that today, even without a kohen in the area, the meat will go bad, will spoil. What a pity, what a shame, what a loss to the owner. That's why Chachamim introduced a new 30-day time frame, which says, look, you have 30 days to find your kohen, to deliver it to him. So that's the basis for this new reason, and for this new time frame, and it applies even to the kohen as well. Even if the kohen already has the behemah, we have this all across the board time frame that you have 30 days to tend to it. Okay, now, but we're still not sure. I mean, does the b'risa mean, as we figure it means, that 30 days is an addition to the year? V'adayin tiboyli, still we're not sure. Shloshim yom achash nosay, this 30-day period was strictly when the mum only occurred after the year was up. So you get this new 30-day time period. Perhaps it applies even when the mum happened within the year. We give you 12 months plus a 30-day bonus of the, you know, another tashma. Okay, so we haven't really clarified. Here comes another attempt from a new brisa, which will clarify that, in fact, a year is a year and a year is a year. That's it. A 30-day period was for the mum that occurred post the year. Tashma. Suppose the mum shows up 15 days before the year is up. How much time do you have? Just 15 days until the year is over? Or do you get that 30-day period? Yeah. You're allowed to complete, you know, the 30-month period by adding another 30-day period, adding another 15 days, which will land beyond the year. So clearly, 30 days is not an extra allowance. It's either 12 months, and if it's less than 30 days to go, you get 30 days. But it's not 12 months plus 30 days. It's one or the other. Okay, let's say it's a couple of months before the year is up, you only have to land the year. That's it, done. But if it happened after the year, or less than 30 days till the year was up, then you get 30 days. Shmamina? Okay, that confirms that it's a separate time frame. And in fact, Masaya Lebelazar, it's right, Lebelazar says likewise, that it's either the year or 30 days. Dar Lebelazar, Noisn Leshleshim Yoy, Mishashnel by Mum. If the Mum occurred after the year was up, he gets 30 days. So it's a separate new time frame introduced for this special circumstance. Ikadamri. But there was another version of Amar Belazar that, in fact, 30 days are an add-on to a standard year. Amar Belazar Menayin LeBachar Shenod B'Mum B'Toich Shnosoi. What about a Bachar who happened to have a mum within the year? Shenoisn Lo Shleishim Achash Shnosoi. So he gets till the end of the year plus 30 days. Shenamar Al-Fnei Shem Al-Kech Techlenu Shana B'Shana. Shana is the standard 12-month year. B'Shana plus another symbolic micro year. The year is comprised of 12 months, 12 building blocks. So you get an element of a year, a micro year, a month. How many days are symbolic to a year? 30 days. Rashi brings in Gemara Rosh Hashanah as well, which works with this concept that 30 days have a status to a certain extent like a year. It's a significant portion. It's an element. It's a month element that makes years, so it has the year element within it. It's a mini year. Okay, so elu shleishim yoyim, and in fact, according to this version of Belezer, it's standard procedure to give 12 plus 30 days. Meisvi, here comes a kasha from that brisa, which proved otherwise. You only get till the end of the year, unless it happened, you know, later, then you get 30 days, but standard is 12 months, not 12 months plus. If the mum shows up 15 days prior to year's end, all you get is a total of 30 more days. So we shore up the 30 days, we're giving you an extra 15 after the year's up, but that's it. Hashlam in, because you're missing. meant that at least 30 days, but you don't give you an extra 30 days. We don't give you 12 months plus 30 days in every case. Tuyufta rules it tuyufta. It's a reputation on Rav Elazar. Okay, so bottom line. Ideally, a bechor is meant to be looked after within the year. Let's say, you know, especially nowadays, we have to wait for a mum, hold on to it until mum shows up. Mum shows up, you have 30 days to take care of it. If the mum happened within the year, then you have until the end of the year or no more. Now, proper procedure requires that the kohen will take the bechor with this mum and show it to the expert. He's not trusted to make his own, you know, decisions because he's certainly interested in having the bechor settled and shechted, so he has to show it to an independent expert. Suppose he failed to do so prior to shechita. So he notices a mum, he quickly shechts it, and then goes and shows the shecht the bechor to the expert to certify this mum, you know, retroactively. A shechet. Habachar, umara, and then afterwards he shows a smumai to the expert. Rabbi the matter. Okay, so if it turns out to be a mum kavua, as Rashi says, a permanent serious blemish, which allows us to do the, you know, the shechita, so then retroactively it's okay. Rabbi the matter. He doesn't penalize him, he doesn't punish him for reversing the order. Doing first and then asking. Rameh, I mean, no. First you ask, then you do. Since you did the shechita without the mumcha, without the expert certification, also, you can't partake in this bechor at all. Go and bury it. Furthermore, if a fellow is not a certified expert, and he decided to imposter as one, he certifies a bechor and they shechted because of him. So now it's Aser. Harezi, you cover, you got to bury it. Vishal Mebeis, who's responsible to compensate the owner? This so-called pseudo-expert for bringing him this loss. Okay, so we have two parts of the Mishnah, which sort of interlink. First part is, he showed it after Shechita. Rabbi says it's okay. Rameh says not okay. And then we have the Shechita that happened without proper certification. It's Aser and the perpetrator has to pay. Amar Rabba Babrachana. What's going on? What's the machlokes about? Bidukin Shabayim Kudamli Pligid Asr. It really depends on the nature of the blemish. If it was something in the eye, like a cataract, all agree, even if it was inspected and discovered after Misa, you can't rely on it retroactively. Even Rabbi agrees. You know why? Bipnei Shein Mishtanen, because sometimes they change. They appear more serious and severe after the, you know, traumatic death experience of the animal. Just because it looks serious now doesn't mean it was that way beforehand. So you can't rely on it. Even Rabbi agrees that the behemoth is asr. Lo nechlechu. When is the machlekes about? Ela bemum shebeguf. You have a blemish in the actual body. Rashi says, for instance, a split ear. I mean, that's not changing. If it's there now, it was there before. So logically, you would allow it. I mean, even though you should have, right, done this before Shechita, but clearly, it had a blemish. Right? But Rameh holds no. The Rameh Sofer, Rameh holds Gazrinan. We penalize Mumin Shebeguf, even this clear-cut blemish. We don't allow it. Atu Dukin Shabayin on account of the you know, of those types of blemishes, which can go either way, which can go through a transformation and change due to the Shechita. So we don't allow any inspections and certifications after Shechita on account of those which don't work. Rabbi Tosafot Lagazrinan. Rabbi says, I understand by the iron thing, by the cataract, what you see now doesn't mean it was there all along, so you can't rely on it, but by other types of mumin, which you know were consistently there, you can use them as a certification even after the fact. Tan Namihach, we find the same in a Braisa. which paints the machlekes in this context. Hashechet es abchor maras mumav. So he did the shechita and then he showed it. Rabbi Omer, it depends. B'dukin shebayin, if it's in the eye, also you can't rely on it after the fact. Bnei shein mishtanim, because they tend to change. They tend to look worse now than they really were during the animal's lifetime. So it's not an indication of a proper mum. But mumim shebaguf, other types of clear-cut mumim, which you know, well, if they're there now, they were there before mutter, then it's okay. Mishay understand, not going to change on you. Okay, so according to Rabbi Yehuda, we differentiate between these delicate mumim, which are not sufficient, versus the more severe mumim. Rameh Imar echadze v'chadze, whether it's this or that, doesn't matter. Osir, you can't use them as a green light today. Because they tend to change and look different now than before. Ask the Gemara, do you mean literally? A split air is going to split after the Shechita? You mean all types of mumim tend to change? Even a mumim shebaguf, like an air, or like a split lip, or rather, what he means to say is, it's a gzera, we penalize him. True. The missing air didn't happen after Shechita, but we don't allow it. On account of those types of mumim, which could have undergone a change, so we forbid them all without distinction. Amar Nachmar Yitzchak, we turn to the base. Mas nisan amideka, if you look at the wording of the Mishnah, you will see likewise that by those dukan shebaayin types of mumim, all agree it's asr after the fact, because you never know what was there before. It looked like before Shechita. The machlokes is limited to more blatant blemishes. Rabbi Yehuda says no gzeira, Rabbi Meir says gzeira, masisa medeka, Rabbi Omer. Rabbi Meir concludes, hoil v'nishcha shalapi mumcha asr. He says, you know why it's asr? Because it was done without a mumcha. Now, if he's only speaking about dukan shebaayin, he could have simply said, it's usher because it tends to change, and you can never know what it looked like before. And he doesn't say that. Rather, he says it's usher because there was no mumcha involved. It wasn't properly certified. Apparently, he's painting a broad brush and forbidding even situations where logic would dictate otherwise. No, the gzera forbids them all. Shema mina, that confirms that knas hakakonis Rav Meir Shema mina. It's a knas to forbid them all without differentiation. Yiboyelu. Now comes the question. You know, these dukan shebaayin mumim, are they all the same? They're all of the same type of nature that they change? We say the one on the ear is also on account of the one on the eye because it changes. The kulu mishtani, all these types of cataract-related blemishes, they all tend to change? So what you see now is not what was there before, or some and some. Some do change, some don't. Ikad mishtani, some tend to look different now. Ikad mishtani, some actually remain consistent without undergoing change. What's the point of this question? Man of kemina, any halachic difference between the, yeah, like Hushis Sadi, do we contradict the witnesses? Rashi explains like this. Let's say you shechted the b'chor without proper certification. And now you see a real cataract which makes it really blemished. And Edom come running in, Reuven and Shimon say, oh, that blemish? We testify, I'm telling you, this was there before the Shechita. As is, it was a serious, permanent blemish. Do we assume they're saying the truth or not? So it depends. Yamas kulu mishtani. If what you're saying is that all cataract-related blemishes tend to change, then you know they're saying they're being untruthful. Shakrininu, saying sheker. It's impossible that it was exactly as is all along. But the armor zikad mishtani. But if you're going to tell me some do change, some don't, just since we don't know exactly what happened, so we can't give them a green light, because perhaps it got worse now, but if they're telling us with certainty, we know it was this serious all along, so then some can rely on them. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, there were no penalties involved in the whole sugya, then there's no reason to penalize him. You know, for sure, this was a mom that was there before Shechita. My. Okay, so which way? Tashmai comes it right. Amar Rabba, Babrachana. Sachar Rav Yashia. So he told me, the Rashi, the Menusha told me, come, let me show you, have a look. Bedukin, Shehen Mishtan. I'll show you the dukin that change through the Shechita process. Let's look at his wording. The fact that he's coming and inviting him to show him samples indicates that's not so clear-cut. Apparently there are different varieties of the dukin shabayin blemish. Some do change, some don't. Mechal de'ikad mishtani, some change during the shechita, because the mishtani, some don't change, remain the same and consistent. So in fact, if we have Edom to testify as such, this mum kavua in the ayin was there all along, then according to Rabbi, that's okay. Okay, so bottom line, you meant to have the bechor examined by a mumcha to certify the mum, to allow the shechita. Suppose he did the shechita and then decided to pay the mumcha a visit. Bedukin sheba ayin, which tend to change during the shechita, all agree it's asra because you never know what it looked like beforehand. Maybe it wasn't a mum kavua beforehand. It looks worse now than it was. Unless you have Edom with certainty that it was a mum kavua all along, in which case Rabbi Yehuda would allow it. Rabbi Meir forbids all cases. Even if it's a clear-cut blemish, which couldn't have developed afterwards. It's like an account of a gzera. You don't differentiate between one and the other. Keep things clear and consistent, and everything's asr. In fact, the Mishnah continues, Misha ena mumcha, who knows a bachar, a non-expert decided to become an expert, take a look at the bachar, he certifies it, v'nishchal tapiv, and they shechted it accordingly, harezi yikav, yishalmi beisai. You bury the bachar, it's asr, and he has to pay up. Why are you forbidding the bachar? The fact is now you see a mum kavua. Oh, leimot tnan stoma k'ramir. Apparently this Mishnah is following Ramir. The anonymous, halacha is really Ramir. Who forbids any post-shechita situation, despite the presence of a mum kavua? Too late, too bad. No, doma b'dukin shabayin, the rekha, perhaps, even Rabbi would agree in this case, doma b'dukin shabayin, the eye issue, which tends to look more severe now than before, therefore it's also. How much does this pretend expert have to pay? Tana, because Mishalman has to pay. Mishalman reveal a daka mechzel gasa. He doesn't have to pay full worth. Pays, if it's a daka, a goat, a sheep, a light animal, a quarter of its value. If it's a gasa, heavy one, half. Why? My time, or why? Only that much. Or a papa, zehefsin rubiv, zehefsin mut. So, firstly, Rashi explains that why is he not paying full amount? Why not pay 100%? So he says because really it's mamon hamutal b'safek, it's money in doubt. Meaning, we're not sure if if this bechor was ever going to be certified. Perhaps it's never. It was never going to get a real mum. So who says I'm causing you loss? I mean, if you know for sure that if not for my involvement, you'd have had a proper mum and shown it to an expert and shechted and had the full benefit. Fine, then you're right. I owe you 100%, but maybe it was never going to happen. Maybe your luck was going to be that you're going to be stuck with this animal forever. It's never going to get a mum until it dies. So you have to split the amount. And that explains why by the gas he pays 50%. But the question is why by the daka only 25%? My time on our papa. Because Zehef said Meruba. Zehef said Mut. The behema gasa, big animal, big loss, he's got to pay more. As opposed to the lighter animal, smaller value, less. Ask the Gemara, what do you mean? Yachi. You're paying according to the laws. Lefum pseudo, according to the law, is l'sham, let him pay. Okay, so whatever it is, half the laws. What do you mean? Why are you going down to 20? Rashi explains in the first pshat. Gzeres godly behemadaka means that the farmer has got to work really hard to tend to these light animals. It takes much more to care and to look after a goat and a sheep versus a cow and a bull. So in effect, this pseudo expert has relieve the kain of a lot of work. Perhaps it would have been a long road until he would have found the proper mum and, you know, really, you know, shechted properly. So in a way, he saved the money too. He saved him all the expense of raising the animal. So that's why he gets a deduction. As opposed to the cattle, where he just has to pay outright 50% of the loss, because, as we said, it's really a mum and a mutabu safek, which goes 50-50. Continues the Mishnah in a similar vein. Dona Sadin. So, a dayan, a judge, issued a verdict in financial matter, and he made a grave mistake. Zika as achayev, the guilty party, he absolves. V'chiv as hazakai, and he obligated the innocent party to pay. Well, let's say there was a question posed to him regarding Tumah v'tahara. Okay, they used to come to the Rav, they asked the Rav, is this Tumah, is this Tar, or Tash, I'm not sure. And he mistakenly switched it around. He erred. Timah satar, something which was meant to be Tar, he issued a ruled as being Tumah v'tier, or he decided that it's going to be Tar when it's really supposed to be a Satumah. Masha'asa asa, done is done. So we don't reverse the verdict. V'shalmi beisai. But this chacham, this dayan, has to compensate for that loss from his own, you know, pocket. May muchel abezin. But let's say he was a certified dayan, so he was authorized by the bezin to issue rulings and halachis. In which case, even if he made a mistake, patur mil shalem, he did not pay for any losses. That's the perks that come with the job. Ask the Gemara, why at all does he have to pay? I mean, at most, it's just causation. He misled the litigants. He confused the fellow with the truma, with the tumma, right? So he caused them a loss. Lema tnan stomach or a mayor? Do you mean this anonymous mission is found for a mayor who says the doin din the garmi? Who maintains that when it's garmi, when it's a really strong causation, when he actually outright caused loss? So even though it was by causation, he's chayiv. The doin dina de garmi. He applies a din to garmi, he obligates a fellow who causes loss in this manner. Are we going with that opinion only? Amar Allah, Amar Rav, no, not necessarily. We're speaking that he manually carried out his verdict. So with his own hands, he caused a loss. How's that? Amar Allah, Amar Rav, Kikon Shinosav Nosam Biyat. So in the Dine Mamanus, you know, question, so what happened was, he moved around the money. He obligated Reuben to pay Shimon erroneously, and he took the money from Reuben and gave it to Shimon. So he physically transferred the money, and he caused him harm by way of direct physical action. It wasn't just causation. Shinosa, but not somebody else. He took it, he gave manually. Okay, so I understand. You know, the first halach, there was a fellow who was zakai, he was really not obligated to pay, and he obligated him. So he caused him direct harm by taking his money. He took his money and gave it to the other party. So by transferring the money, he caused him direct loss. But in the next case of the Mishnah, zika sachayev, a fellow who was really meant to pay, and he absolves him. Okay, so all he said was, you're potter, Rashi says. I mean, one word, you're potter. How is that? How can that manifest itself in a direct act that causes him loss? Hey, chidami. Says the one, you don't really potter out of. He simply told him, you're potter. So there was no physical intervention there. Amar Avina, you know what we're talking about? What happened was, that the lender, Reuven lent Shimon money. Okay, and Shimon gave Reuven a collateral. And Reuven had this mashkin in his possession. And since the dying erroneously absolves Shimon and exempts him from paying back Reuven, now Reuven owes the mashkin back to Shimon. And that's what the dying did. Reuven had in his possession a mashkin to secure the loan, which now dissipated, not lay menu, and the dying reached over and took the mashkin from Reuven and returned it to Shimon. So by absolving Shimon, he actually caused Reuven direct loss because he was physically involved in returning the mashkin. In the next case, Timas HaTor, so he ruled that something that was really tar to be tame, how is there physical involvement other than just verbal expression? Again, the Agabu Sheretz. He maintained that this item is not really tar, it's tame, and to Rashi says Lahamid is Dvorav. To bring them to the point of no return, okay, to commit them, commit the fellow to his ruling, he went out and used Matami. He took a sherid, that lizard, tapped it onto the guy's fruit, just to make his point that it's Tami. So it was a physical act. And finally, Tiras HaTami, something which was meant to be Tami, he considered it to be Tar, it wasn't just a ruling. This fruit which he ruled to be Tar, she even paid rice of. To make his point, he took it and threw it into the container with the other apples belonging to the petitioner, just to make his point, and turns out that he was wrong. The apple was tummy, now he made everything tummy. Okay, so bottom line, a fellow who erred in his ruling, and he wasn't a certified expert, he's chayv to pay up. According to our mayor, even just by causation, according to the other shittas, Garmi would not obligate him. Rather, we're talking that there was a physical involvement, transfer of money, transfer of mashkin, you know, tami the fruit, or mixing the tami fruit to the, in which case he certainly obligated. In fact, there was a story of Masa Bepura about a cow. Shenit lo ha'im shalo. The womb had been removed. And the question was posed to Rabbi Tarfon. The fellow wanted to know, what's the status of this cow? I just discovered it has no aim. Is she a treifa? Is she considered like a seriously wounded animal? In which case, you can't eat her. She's a treifa. Or perhaps an animal can survive properly without a name. Rabbi Tarfon maintained that it's a treifa. In fact, v'chil Rabbi Tarfon l'klavim, due to Rabbi Tarfon's ruling, the owner sent it to the dogs and lost his cow. Turns out that he was mistaken. Uba masav necham biyavna. So the story is presented to Chacham in Yavna, but he really said it's perfectly fine, perfectly kosher. In fact, we have testimony. Shamar Tudus. Tudus was a haroifa. He was a doctor, perhaps a veterinarian as well. And he says, look, it's a common phenomenon, it's a common occurrence that the ain't part of a chazira, Yoitzim Alexander Shal Mitzrayim in Egypt, Alexandria, which was the center of civilization. They had the best quality, you know, top quality animals. They didn't want to export their genes elsewhere, so any para and chazira, female pig that was taken out of its rhyme, they would first disable it from having offspring. So there was no para chazira that would leave Mitzrayim, shein choyt chanaim shelo, which didn't have its aim removed prior to export. Shushloi tail shouldn't have further offspring in other lands to avoid, you know, competition. So they kept exclusivity and they kept their animals from developing out of the land. But bottom line, clearly, these were healthy animals despite lacking the aim. So you see, it doesn't constitute a treifa. So after this clarification of Tarfon, he regretted his decision. He says, Amar of Tarfon, so he sort of said to himself, he says, Holcha chamorcha Tarfon, referring to himself, your donkey's gone. You're going to have to sell your donkey to pay off for this loss that you caused. That you caused this fellow by considering him as para treifa. Amalar Rav Kiva, Rav Kiva tells him, don't worry, Rav Tarfon. No, you're an expert. Patrat, you're exempt. Why? Shata mumcha lebezn. You're a certified expert. And we know, v'chala mumcha lebezn, patam l'shalem. Okay, so you can have your donkey back. Ask the Gemara. Even without this mumcha factor, why would he have to pay for this loss? But typically, either way, he would be exempt because the Torah Dvar Mishnah. You see, there are different types of errors. You can have a blatant error where he missed the open halacha, missed the Mishnah, let's say, such as in this case, we have a Mishnah Maseches Chulin, Daf Nadal, Rashi says, Nitla Eim Shalom. Even without the aim, the animal's okay. It's not deemed a treva. So if it was an open, blatant mistake, the whole verdict gets reversed. You can just go back on it. It was an erroneous ruling. Unlike more of a mistake that relates to logic or to deliberation or to analysis, but if it's an open, clear-cut mistake, just undo the verdict, in which case it's null and void retroactively, and it's not deemed like he caused any damage. Says the Gemara, you're right. It's one of two factors to absolve Rav Tarfon. Chada Vayit Ka'amar, he meant to add another reason to the basic reason. Chada, firstly, the Tavid Mishnah, Chayzer, Vadayin, Chacham. Errors on a matter which is an open halacha, and he can just undo the verdict, in which case it's as though he never issued that verdict and he's potter. Void, furthermore, in your case, if you have personal expertise, personal certification, you're potter regardless of the nature of your mistake. Inami, even if b'shikla das ta'isa, your mistake related to b'shikla das, analysis and understanding, even if that was the root of your mistake, b'shikla das ta'isa, you're still part of mumcha lebezn nata, because of your high status, you're mumcha lebezn, v'chala mumcha lebezn, batam l'shalom. So either way, you're exempt. Okay, in conclusion, we have the mum on this bechor, you have until 12 months. If the mum occurred after 12 months, you have 30 days. Ideally, the bechor should be inspected prior to shechita. If you did shechita, then discover the mum kavua. Pidukin sheba'ayin, it's usher according to all shechitas, unless you have the edim, which, right? In which case it would be mutter contributor, but mumi shebaguf contributor is okay, because if it's there now, it was there before. Meir says, no, gzera, all cases are us. If you're not an expert, gave you the green light and caused you hefsid, there's a formula to work with, half, 25%, depending on the type of animal. Likewise, a dayan who erred in his ruling, in dinim mominis, or other types of things, unless he's a mumcha lebezn, he's chayef to pay. According to all, even if we're not doing dinu degarmi, but if there was a direct act which caused him loss, he's chayef to pay, unless he was a mumcha lebezn, such as in the case of Rav Tarfon with the para. All the best to you and hatzlacha.